Agenda item number six, Suzanne McKenna. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning. Good morning, Commission. So I bring you to Suffolk. Susan McKenna requests authorization to retain an existing 7-foot by 19-foot enclosed boathouse and to construct a 10-foot by 10-foot floating dock as an addition to an existing private pier along Bennett's Creek at their riparian home at 5972 Bennett's Creek Lane in the city of Suffolk. The property is located on Bennett's Creek just south of the confluence of the Nansemond River in the city of Suffolk. And we have an aerial view here of their existing pier structure and the enclosed boathouse. About 2 months ago, we heard from the Wallaces and their enclosed boathouse, which is just two properties north of here. In March of 2016, Mr. Bob Livengood of L&L Marine submitted an application on behalf of the applicant to build a boat lift on their existing private pier. As part of the standard application review, it became apparent that there was an existing enclosed structure that had not been authorized by the VMRC. So after correspondence with the agent and the applicant, we asked for additional information as well as gave them some options for moving forward to either remove the structure or to bring it into statutory authorization or how they can keep it. They explained that the boathouse was built shortly after they had the authorization to build the pier. It was built by the homeowner. He thought he had spoken with a representative from the VMRC that said that it did not require a permit. It sounds like it wasn't actually a representative of the VMRC that actually gave them that information. They would like to retain the existing structure, which they currently use to house their specialized kayaks. And they also have an additional request for a 10 by 10 floating dock as an addition to the structure. I had several visits with the applicants and have a few pictures to show you. Here's the existing structure. There's a door here and a door here where the applicants are able to take their canoes, which are stored on the side of the wall here, and move them from the structure onto their floating dock and then into the water. Here's a picture of inside the shed where you have a canoe here and a canoe here, and then additional items that they use for storage as well. So when reviewing after-the-fact applications, staff considers whether the project would have likely been favorably reviewed had the application been considered prior to construction. Historically, the commission has debated enclosed shed structures over state-owned submerged lands, and they're critically reviewed for water dependency. Our subaqueous guidelines give us a little bit of information on how to determine water dependency. It defines water dependency as those structures and activities that must be located in, on, or over state-owned submerged lands. And it further stipulates that when applying this definition, both of these must be answered affirmatively. Is it necessary that the structure be located over the water? And is it necessary that the activity associated with the structure be over the water? The use of the definition of water dependency does not necessarily preclude the commission from issuing a permit for the structure. It does require the commission to have a public hearing, and they may determine that the structure isn't water dependent, but it may be a reasonable use of state-owned submerged lands at that point. These types of projects are evaluated on a case-by-case basis by the commission during public hearing. So for staff recommendation, after evaluating the merits of the project and after considering all the factors contained in 28.2-1205, staff recommends removal of the sides of the existing shed to qualify the structure for statutory authorization. The applicant has communicated that they are not interested in this option and would like to retain the structure as built. If the commission feels that the shed is appropriate to authorize, staff further recommends that approval of the shed be conditioned upon the payment of a triple permit fee of $75, as provided in 28.2-1206D of the Code of Virginia. Additionally, if the commission chooses to authorize the shed to remain, staff recommends the commission consider accepting a civil charge in lieu of further enforcement actions for the unauthorized construction. We believe a civil charge of $3,000 using our matrix would be appropriate in this instance, based upon minimal impact and a major degree of deviation or noncompliance.
Other questions from the commission? Mr. Neal.
What about, are we not talking about the requested floating dock?
The request for the floating dock is also part of this process. It does require a permit from the VMRC because it is greater than the 400 square feet that's authorized by the code. And if that's part of this conversation that you would like to vote on, you absolutely can.
Well, I guess it was, we started with that.
You're right.
But then it's not in staff recommendation one way or the other.
It does not require a commission vote.
Yes, that answers my question, I guess.
Other questions from the commission?
Good one.
Mr. Zetra.
Why are you recommending they take off the sides?
The Code of Virginia authorizes any riparian owner to have an open-sided boathouse or gazebo. But the Code of Virginia says that any other structure that's built over the water must have a permit application and an approval. So in order to get them to fit into the statutory authorization, if they were to remove the sides, we would not need to go through the application process, or I guess the review process.
All right, let me follow up. So then why if they did that, then, I mean, to me, what you're presenting here is a late application and a triple permit fee of $75 and a civil fine of $3,000, right?
To keep the structure.
The way it is?
The way it is.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Thanks.
Other questions from the commission? Rachel, I got a question.
Okay.
So this pier is originally built in 94.
Yes, sir.
By the current property owner. And then the shed was constructed sometime after that. Do you know when?
According to the property owners, around 1997.
Was there an explanation on why a permit was not sought for the shed?
From conversations with the applicant, they had someone on site, and which was a volunteer for the VMRC. I'm not sure who might that have been.
What was the volunteer for the VMRC?
Apparently we haven't had volunteers, so I'm not sure who this person was. But that person did tell them that because it's not an additional square footage encroachment over the pier, it most likely would not have required a permit from the VMRC. That was incorrect information that they were given.
I'm still stuck on the idea that somebody would volunteer as a state employee, unpaid. What? Any other questions from the commission?
Yeah, great.
Thank you. Is the applicant present or represented? Please raise your right hand. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Please state your name for the record, Bob.
Bob Livengood, and I'm the agent for the project as well as the contractor. Apparently the shed, which we did not build, the homeowner built himself, was built approximately 3 years after the pier. So the shed has been in place for approximately almost 20 years now. The shed hasn't been an issue with, it wasn't protested by a neighbor didn't call and complain to VMRC. The shed came about as being on the dock because I did what I'm supposed to do and filled out an application for a boat lift to be added. So that's how it was alerted to VMRC that the shed was there. So I'm the one that caused all this problem. in talking to the applicants, the reason that the shed was put up in the first place, they had an outboard motor off a small boat they have stolen. The kayaks that they have in there, and they can touch more than that, $2,000 to $3,000 range. The paddles are $200 to $300 range. And they were having stuff taken from the dock, so that's why they had the sides put on it, so they could pull the kayaks right out onto the dock. Both of the applicants are in their 70s now, mid-70s, And it just felt like that, especially now, that, you know, these things are roughly 16 and a half feet long, to have to carry them down to the pier and try to get them into the water, 5-foot-wide pier, carry them down there was not an option. That was the reason they really would like to leave the structure. They both are retired. They're on a fixed income. Originally, in discussions with Rachel on this, we were pretty much in agreement that the civil charge was going to be $1,000, and then I found out yesterday in an email that it had gone to $3,000. So we understand that the project was not permitted. We understand it is a violation, but they would really like to keep the structure, and we would like to, if we are able to keep it, we'd like to reconsider the civil charge of being reduced slightly if we could.
Questions from the commission? Bob, do you want to speak about the floating pier?
The floating pier, when all this came about, we went ahead and added the floating pier because they really wanted the floating pier because the kayaks were so long, they were having trouble getting these things out of the little boathouse and getting them into the water because the floating dock that's there now is only 10 feet long. So these things are like 16, 17 feet long. So it was a lot to kind of hold to try to put down in the water. So they were just trying to extend the floating dock a little bit for that reason.
Okay. Any other questions from the commission? Mr. Packard.
What is this neighborhood like? I didn't get a sense from the literature or photographs. And are we densely populated like
and they can touch more. I would say their property is probably 3 or 4 acres. It has probably 300 or 400 feet of frontage. The neighbors on either side already have piers. I've built most of them in the neighborhood. But most of the lots are fairly large in this neighborhood.
Thank you.
Other questions from the commission? Thank you, sir. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify in favor? Please come forward, sir. I need to swear you in then. Please raise your right hand. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Please state your name for the record.
John A. Stevenson.
Welcome, Mr. Stevenson.
I'll give you a quick history. Basically.
Please speak up a little bit.
Basically, I retired from the federal government. I met my wife because I was on the BRAC commission to close the center across the bridge here. I met L&L Marine late 96 when I got early retirement. I'm from Massachusetts. As a matter of fact, Rachel's getting married. Her husband to be is from my hometown. When I was with Bob, we wanted to replace the footprint of the original pier, which we eventually did. This was actually done in the beginning of 1997. I wasn't going to address it, but an inspector come out. And this person was a volunteer. And from what I gather, what this person was asking, it was Corps of Engineers. They were only interested in the grass. They said that, well, it doesn't change the footprint to put the little canoe house up. So she said to go to the city of Suffolk. I went to every place in the city of Suffolk, and trust me, I didn't even know VMRC existed. I learned about VMRC once we joined the Nansmith Preservation Association, because we also raise oysters and build all the stuff. That's when I learned about this organization. I've also learned they need 100 more employees. Basically, if you look at the photographs which Rachel put up, I built this shed myself 2 months after the pier was built. And if you study that little shed, I was proud of it. Because if you notice, I stood on water for one whole side of it. I have a little motorboat, which you can see in the picture. When we got it, first thing that happened is the motor was stolen. I don't know how many of you people have piers up here. But a problem exists in Bennett's Creek. It's called a free boat lift. And you'd be amazed how many people on weekends go by and eye the motors and everything else. Basically, if you look at the next page, there's two of the canoes in it. I put the value of these canoes. I don't know if people are into canoes, but one's $6,000, one's $5,000. They're all Kevlar and carbon graphite. I have it. My wife and I are gung-ho naturalists. We've never cared for power boats because you go out, you come back. It's the same thing. Well, we have canoed every creek in North Carolina, everyone in Hampton Roads. If you look at one of these boats, it's the white one owner. That has gone from Niagara Falls to Albany. That's the type of canoes we are. If you look at the carbon graphite one, this is taken at Back Bay. That boat has won canoe races. We have had races in our mid-60s at the time, racing guys 25 years old, and we still beat them. All the money we gave to the Nansemond River Preservation Association. All I'm requesting is to keep what I have. I'm sorry that I broke the law. Or I did not know. Rachel came up with something I feel is extremely important. She wants to come up with a pamphlet that goes to every town, every realtor, that explains VMRC. I never knew you existed. All I have to say.
Hold on a second, Mr. Stevenson. There might be a few questions here.
Yes.
And Mr. Tankard.
Mr. Stevenson, so you, did you testify or Rachel testify that you'd had vandalism or theft issues at your
yes.
property? And that was one of the reasons that you built this shed?
Yeah, we've even... Because right now, it's a 10-by-10 floating dock. We want to go to 20-foot. I challenge you people to stand on that dock when a boat goes by. You people drive cars. Speed limit's 60. You may do 65. What do you think of the guy that goes 90? I had police boats at this pier for 2 years. That was their home, to try to tell people from the free boat ramp what the word no wake means. In Massachusetts, they got rid of that word. They changed it to 5 miles an hour. They've also tied it into the DMV, so if you get a ticket from them, it goes against your driver's license.
Okay, let's bring it back to this structure at hand here. Incidentally, I'll note that, yes, there are a significant number of Virginians that don't know of the existence of the Virginia Marine Resources Commission. However, we have been around since 1875, so we're not a new state agency.
No, I was just disappointed that the city of Suffolk didn't know.
Rachel, I believe the staff has crafted a compromise, which would be to allow you to retain the structure but take the sides down.
Yeah.
What would you like to say about that?
I am actually against that is who's going to stand guard. Right now, no one can steal $12,000 worth of canoes. And trust me, if I had a 250-horsepower motor, I wouldn't worry about someone picking it up and walking off with it. These canoes, and I'm on a limited budget. This home was inherited by my wife. I'm a retired government employee. These people will be retired government employees. They will realize you don't make money. Once the canoe is gone.
Especially the volunteers.
I mean, once it's gone, it's gone. We do not canoe weekends anymore. We only do it during the day. The little motorboat we're using now, Sunday was a great day. We saw at least 1,000 dolphins right out here. We used to do it by canoe, but we're so old we can't keep up to the speed they go at anymore.
Are there any other questions from the commission? Mr. Zedra.
What do you think is fair? What would be your recommendation on what you should pay?
Well, the original one was $1,000. See, if it stays at a $3,000, I may eventually tear everything down.
What I'm asking you is, what do you think is fair?
$1,000.
Okay, and the $75.
See, I did not go about to do this by being illegal. I thought I was in the right. You know, I'm a government employee. I spent a lot of time at the Pentagon. You ask a question, you know what the answer always was? Do you understand what that means? And that's what I got when I went through it. If I grew up in Virginia on the water, I would know VMRC. Where I grew up, and she knows it, if you want up here in Massachusetts, figure 4 years and a whole lot of paying off people.
Well, we're better than Massachusetts then.
No, but I mean,
in many ways,
it's different. I mean, I look at, see, Virginia, Massachusetts, and where I grew up, Cape Cod, is all tourism. You don't see ships being built and coal barges going by. So it is a little different atmosphere. But, no, I'm willing to pay $1,000 to keep it. If it's $3,000, I may just, if people want to help me, I'll tear it all down because I'm going to do it on my own.
Are any other questions from the commission? Thank you, Mr. Stevenson.
Thank you.
Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to testify on this matter one way or another, either pro or con? Any questions to staff? Let me close the public hearing. Public hearing is now closed. The matter is before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Ballard.
Can you discuss it, how you came up with the 3,000 and whether 1,000 was originally contemplated? Or?
I'll start with, we have a matrix that we use that is written in regulation for determining the amount of impact and then the amount of deviation from the regulation. And then more as well.
Tony, you want to flesh that out a little bit?
Yeah, I'll go through this in a little bit more detail. In your packet in front of you, under the Habitat tab, you'll see the matrix that the Commission developed back in, I think, in 2012 that was attempting to sort out how to assess civil charges and what the proper amounts would be. I've got a copy here in front of me. And we look at amount of deviation and the significance of the impact of the structure. And so the significance impact would be the direct environmental impact. How much area does it cover? How many fish might it kill? You know, what's the impact on water quality? Does it cover up SAV? The other factor is the extent of deviation from the permit. Should they have known a permit was required? Had they applied for previous permits? What other factors do we look at in terms of this type of structure that we're contemplating? Is it something that would normally be approved, or is it something that is a bit unusual and not really something the commission or staff would recommend approval of? For better or worse, in this case, we've got what we consider a non-water-dependent structure. It's a storage shed. Granted, it does store kayaks. Very valuable kayaks, as the testimony has suggested. And it is easier, I guess, for the property owner to get the kayaks in and out of the water from the dock. But what staff looked at in this case was it's a structure for storage. And as a result, you can put storage sheds on your land that don't have to be over the water. And it gets at one of the fundamental issues that this commission has dealt with over the years. I mean, I've been here for 30 years, and this commission has wrestled with the issue of water dependency, what a private individual should be able to put over public property, over state submerged lands. And that's what really this gets at. And in our evaluation, we felt it was appropriate to remind the commission that we dealt with two very significant cases that resulted in this matter going through the courts to the Court of Appeals to confirm that the commission had the authority to deal with these types of structures and could require them to be renewed if you felt it was appropriate and it wasn't an appropriate use of state submerged lands. That were the Evelyn case and the Palmer case. The Palmer case was a situation of a storage shed on a pier very much like this. I don't think they stored kayaks in that shed. It was more just for paraphernalia and equipment associated with use of the pier and boating, but it was not deemed to be a water dependent. And again, the commission went through and defined what water dependency is. We went to some great lengths to try and put some context into what water dependency means. I think for years we felt, well, everybody understood. It goes without saying what water dependent means. But we felt to better identify the criteria, we came up with what's in your evaluation. So with all that said and as background, if you look at the matrix, you know, we did settle on minimal impact, but the degree of deviation in this case we felt was significant given the type of structure it is, non-water dependent, use of state-owned submerged lands, and some information in the record about they'd applied for permits originally but didn't seek a permit for this. Now, you've heard some testimony today about what they tried to find out about the permit requirements, but in the end, we settled on it's a major deviation given the nature of the project and what you would expect to see approved versus what's out there.
Mr. Watkinson, I have a question. This was a fresh, brand new case brought before us for somebody requesting to build a pier, a shed on top of a pier of this size. What would the staff recommendation be?
Denial.
Is there precedent for the commission to routinely deny those type of structures?
I think so, yes, sir.
So the question at hand here is threefold, from what I can figure. Is whether or not the shed should stay, if it should stay in part and opened up, or just let things ride here with a civil penalty.
That's correct.
I think that sums it up for everybody. That's where we're at. Any other questions of staff?
And I would say, just as a matter of clarification, it's a civil charge, and what the property owner has to do is agree to acceptable with the commission. If you don't agree or can't agree that it's acceptable, or the applicant doesn't agree it's acceptable, then it's up to the commission to decide whether to proceed with further legal action and pursue civil penalties, which is pursued in court through the Office of the Attorney General.
Which does raise the next question, and it goes for Mr. Hull here. What are the civil penalties if an agreement can't be reached in this regard?
Matt will probably confirm by looking at the code, but it's up to
$25,000 per day.
Okay.
While you're looking, Mr. Erskine.
I have a question for Mr. Watkinson. I guess in some of the material, it seems that these types of projects are evaluated on a case-by-case basis, and I assume that's referring to not only the court cases that you indicated previously, but this one as well. And I wonder if there was any consideration given to maybe a further definition of water dependency. I mean, I know it's clear, but it seems like this storage shed isn't necessarily for refrigerators and chairs and things like that. It's for water-dependent vessels, and those are canoes or kayaks. And storage, it was that considered? Or?
Well, yeah, we looked at it. I mean, the fact that it is storage. Boats, but they're kayaks. It's not like you have to drive your 21-foot, you know, boat into the shed and lift and put it on lift. That makes it more work. And here, the kayaks and the type of things that are in that building could be stored elsewhere. Again, it is, as the definition for water dependency articulates, it is something that the commission needs to consider on a case-by-case basis. And the uses that are made of that facility and whether or not that weighs into the decision that you reach. And our recommendation, and we think at staff level have been consistent, that when we have these types of structures, we just don't support recommending approval given the non-water dependent nature and the commission's responsibility for authorizing private uses of state sewer plants.
Okay. Thank you.
Backing up, Mr. Hall.
We'll confirm what Mr. Watkinson said. It's the civil penalty is assessed by the court, and it's up to $25,000 per day of violation.
Mrs. Cohn.
Question, if you could remember back, and I don't know if we approved the storage part of this project or not, but there was a rowing club not too long ago that we approved a section of a permit, and the rowing club actually stored their vessels inside.
Wasn't that up in Christchurch?
That was Matthews.
It was Matthews.
And Matthews, yes, you're right. There was a big community facility being proposed at Williams Wharf. It was multifaceted in terms of venue for hosting events, as well as a rowing club, and some parts of the structure extended out over state submerged lands. You're correct in that situation.
Any similarities to the area where they were stored?
Other than the fact that that was more of a public facility than a private facility.
Thank you.
Mr. Frantz.
Is the main thing in question here the sides being on the shed, or is it the whole shed, the roof itself?
Well, as Rachel explained, this code allows for a gazebo-type structure of up to 400 square foot, but that's open side. And so the idea was that you could have a covering over your pier. You can use the deck of your pier for enjoyment and be out of the sun, I think. So the code recognizes that. And to be honest with you, that code change occurred, late 90s, 2000 time frame. I might be wrong about the time frame. But it occurred really as a result of this commission wrestling with the ideas of how much structure should be allowed over a pier on state submerged lands. And the General Assembly put some criteria in the code in terms of what would be allowed as a result of the commission sort of wrestling with that idea of what was acceptable. So, but they left that at open-sided. It wasn't meant to be a facility that's used for storage. It was meant to be an open-sided area that you could enjoy your pier.
So if you took the sides off of this, it wouldn't be a problem.
That's correct.
But and if they wanted to protect this their stuff, if they put like chain link fencing around it, does that?
How does that? Fencing.
You know what I mean, like a dog.
We have allowed people to put screens on their gazebo and viewed that as open site.
I was just trying to think of an alternative where they could protect their.
But it was screened. Right. You see through it. It's open. It's not closed in. It's not acting as a use for storage.
Mr. Zetron.
I know the staff's not responsible for giving legal advice, but was there any discussion between staff and the owners there that if they have an option to agree to what staff recommends, to $3,000, or the alternative is what the Attorney General is going to talk about here, about $25,000 a day for a violation, and I believe that probably starts from the day it started the violation. Is that right?
Yeah, well, it's up to $25,000. I mean, I really doubt that a court would order that much in this case, but, you know.
Especially retroactive to 1994.
Well, we understand that, but I think the risk has got to be adequately explained because I might want to talk to the owners here in a minute again now that I know what the options are, but have you had a chance to talk to them?
I have not. I know Rachel has had conversations with them, and I don't want to speak for Rachel. She can characterize her discussions with them about options. I will tell you that the staff evaluation for $3,000 is mine. When it came to me at that level, I said, listen, I think in looking at the matrix, it needs to be higher than $1,000.
Okay, thank you.
Other hands?
Just to follow up on your question, there is a letter in your evaluation. I think that was sent in May that clarifies all of those options. So it goes over the penalty options as well as the civil charge and how they can move forward. So that was in the letter.
Okay, thank you.
Don't go away. One last question for clarification. So this storage shed has been out there since 1994. 97, correct. I stand corrected there. And this situation and the after-the-fact permit here was properly advertised for the commission meeting today, and there were no protests.
Yes, sir.
No. Would it be fair to include the public has basically accepted that as is, as just part of the landscape? Or is that, would that be an unfair way of looking at it? Feel free to correct the commissioner.
I think that might be taking liberties in the public perception.
Thank you.
It's the commission's responsibility to decide what's the appropriate use of space in those lands.
So I ask the question more rhetorically to make this point here. The easy ones are handled by staff. So what's the commission's will? Mr. Zedron.
You know, I'd really like to help these guys, but the law is the law. And I think, you know, we have an obligation to do the best we can to follow the law. I think staff's done an excellent job trying to help the owners of the land. And I think that the assessment, as they have here, is in accordance with our thinking, and that even though it's high, I think it's what we ought to do. And I think that at least what I heard here is that, and then after the whole commission here talks a little bit, is to bring the owners back up here and ask them, having heard all this discussion, is it their intent to agree to the civil penalty? And if so, we will assess that penalty. And if they don't agree, my understanding is it must go to the Attorney General to proceed with prosecution for penalties. That would be my comment.
Just to clarify a couple of things. I know it's kind of a semantic thing, but it's a civil charge that they'd be agreeing to, not a penalty. And that's, you know, semantics. I'm sorry to quibble about that. But the other thing is the if it does get referred to the AG's office, it wouldn't be a prosecution. It would just be a civil suit for the penalties. Sorry to quibble.
In the interest of clarification, Mr. Livingood, do you have something to add here that's pertinent?
The owners have asked me, we're not disputing that it's wrong, so we don't. We're a little bit confused on this prosecution and send it to the Attorney General. Don't they have the opportunity here, the way I've always understood it, when we've had a violation, they have the opportunity just to take it down. If they can't stomach paying the $3,000, I mean, we're not going to carry this thing. They don't want to go to court over this thing. This couple's losing sleep over this. You know, I'm trying to make sure that they don't die because of this project. Okay, so, you know, it's either, and it's going to be up to them, either they pay some sort of a civil charge or they're just going to have to, you know, just going to have it removed. But I think that the removal is an awesome option, I believe, or the way they've been handled in the past. That was all.
Yes. Mr. Ballard.
I want to commend staff. I think they've put a lot of thought into this, and it's by no means an easy situation. I tend to agree with what they've thought about and the $3,000 civil charge, so I'm a little unclear on the semantics we're going forward with, but I would move to authorize the structure with the $3,000 civil charge if that's what the applicants want. Otherwise, they can choose to remove it or face prosecution.
Plus a $75 charge. Plus a $75.
Plus the triple.
Yes, plus the
permit fee. Thank you.
Permit fee.
Motion by Mr. Ballard here.
Second
that. And a second by Mr. Zetron. To clarify the motion, sure that we're all working off the same motion here. This is a motion that would approve the project as constructed to be retained if there's a civil penalty paid of $3,000 and trip permit fee for $75. That's everybody's understanding?
Civil charge.
Civil charge.
And I think we need to clarify it also includes that addition of that pier, or the floating dock. Isn't that part of this?
That's yeah. correct.
Mr. Ballard, I need to make that pretty specific. You do,
yes.
as part of your motion, approve the floating dock.
Floating dock.
Okay.
Also, floating dock is not contingent payment.
Yeah, I think that's clear, though. Mr. Erskine.
So we're accepting staff recommendation, I understand. but I would just note that the applicant...
Oh, I'm sorry. I want to make sure that the record doesn't get fouled up here. Staff recommendation was for the removal of the sides of the shed. So an alternative staff recommendation was if you're going to authorize the shed to stay as is, that would come with a $3,000 civil charge and triple permit fees. So it's not a staff recommendation that Mr. Ballard made.
Okay. I thought I understood there on the board that it was either or, but okay. It's not the staff recommendation then.
Tony may be able to clarify, but I think you are correct. If they remove the sides, then it's a statutorily authorized structure over the water. If they decide not to remove the sides and they want to keep it, you're still conforming with staff recommendation.
Okay.
Well, that's all clear now.
Okay, if I can...
Mr. continue. Erskine.
So, since we got past that, sorry. the testimony from the applicant was that in his eyes he attempted to contact the appropriate authority and get a recommendation whether or not this was permitted or not in terms of putting this shed structure up. And albeit that was incorrect information, unfortunately, that he received, I also think his testimony was compelling in the sense that he felt he would have gotten a permit had he known and gotten the information, the proper information, that it was required. So I feel that maybe, you know, the $3,000 is a degree of major deviance. That was staff recommendation. Personally, I would feel more comfortable with something less than that in light of the fact that this is determined on a case-by-case basis. So... I'd be interested in others' comments.
Mr. France.
When was this built? 97? In 1997, could he have gotten a permit for this structure as is right now?
At the time, the subaqueous guidelines weren't as specific. However, it would have still required a commission public hearing.
Any more discussion? Mr. Cedar.
You know, I remember a case over here where these guys put a bridge across a river or creek over in the western part of the state. And I also recall the testimony of the people involved, and they said, don't assess a civil penalty or no, civil charge of $1,000. And they asked us, please don't do it. And I think what we voted was, is that's what the guidelines are. This is what staff recommends, and that's what we did. And we voted to impose that $1,000. And those guys, you know, didn't want to violate the law, as I recall it. They went to all the local governmental authorities asking about bridges and so forth like that, and nobody told them about who VMRC was. And so that's why I think we need to kind of support our matrix and the reasonable thing to do.
Mrs. Cullen.
I was looking at the civil charge assessments chart, and under minor deviation, it says if evidence is shown, evidence of factors such that applicant or contractor would not have known project would result in violation. And from his testimony, I know there wasn't a contractor involved, but could that be used?
Ms. Watkinson?
Yeah, I mean, the testimony, I mean, I think it's important for you to consider what was offered here today. A lot of things can always come out at these public hearings that staff's not always aware of. But when you look at the matrix that the commission adopted, there's basically three factors for each criteria. You know, under deviation and noncompliance factors, if you look at minor, there's small deviation. And then there's evidence of factors that the applicant or contractor would have known a project would result in a violation. and all other permits were issued. So there's three criteria in sort of each of the minor, moderate, and major categories for each of these two then types of deviation, one the environmental and one whether or not they deviated from the permit requirements or should have known that permits were required. And in this case, if you look at what major is, it's a large amount of deviation or noncompliance relative to authorized structures or requirements. And this is where we're getting at that better or worse, the non-water dependent issues and the history that this commission has dealt with regard to these types of structures and the problems that they present. So it's a type of structure that weighs in as much as anything here. The evidence that they should have known a permit was required, yeah, there's some testimony that they sought some evidence, but they also had applied a couple years before for permits, and so it's a matter of, I guess, which way you look at that, to be honest with you. And I'm not aware that any other permits were issued for the structure, such as a building permit or something like that. Maybe there's more evidence than we know of, but that's those are the factors to consider, and it's sort of three bullets in each.
Mr. Tackert.
I have a question, just a clarifying point for Mr. Watkinson. So you mentioned that this couple had, in fact, applied for a permit. And this is what the literature states. They had, in fact, applied for a permit earlier without the house.
That's correct. That's my understanding as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, let me chime in just a little bit here. I understand where staff is coming from. Staff is diligent about these matters here. I also understand where Mr. Erskine is coming from here, and that $3,000 does seem to be an awful lot. And maybe that's more than is necessary. I'm undecided at the moment. I would love to hear a bit more about that. There is one point here that's to me kind of concern, and it's a bit more of a precedent than anything else here, is that the testimony here that the shed was constructed to prevent theft is uncompelling to me, in that anybody that wants to store anything near their pier here would therefore feel they'd have the right to construct a shed and some enclosure in order to prevent somebody from stealing it. So to that end, it's not compelling. I thought that the compromise here of removing the sides here gets them into compliance and saves them money here and puts this into compliance and kind of in keeping with the rest of the community and the open-sided boathouses that we see out there as it is. So don't mean to yammer too much here, but I understand why $3,000 is the recommendation. I'd probably be happy with $2,000 if we ended up with that, but it's up to you all. Mr. Tackert.
Well, I think it is pertinent that they applied for what they wanted earlier, and then they went on and built something more later. We see this kind of on a regular basis where people apply for something and then they add to it a little later on, hoping for forgiveness. I don't know if this is the case or not, but again, I think it goes to the idea of precedent. I don't think we need to begin a precedent of these iterations of approval that sometimes we get into in the past. So I think in this case we do charge $3,000 as a civil charge. They can decide to take that civil charge or not. They can take the sides down and be on their way. So I agree with the motion, and I'd like to see us move forward.
Mr. Miner. Oh, okay. Well, backing up here, we have a motion by Mr. Ballard here, and it was a second by Mr. Zetrent here, and the motion is to authorize the structure as is here, contingent upon the payment of a $3,000 civil penalty.
Charge.
Civil charge. And triple permit fee, and to keep the floating dock. So any other discussion on that motion and that path forward? I'll call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes?
No.
And the chair votes no as well. But the motion passes 7-2. Mr. Stevenson, Ms. McKenna, we accept the $2,000 civil penalty to, or $3,000 civil penalty to keep this structure as is? You get to keep the structure upon payment of the $3,000 civil charge, plus the triple permit fee of $75.
The only question I had is, you made the statement to keep the neighborhood the same. There's 8 illegal boathouses on our creek.
Mr. Stevenson, the question at hand here.
Okay. Can I postpone the answer until VMRC later?
Yes. If you'll please keep in contact with staff and let them know fairly quickly here, within the next couple of days.
Can I get my little piece of plastic back?
Give you what?